Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
What is happening? Welcome to episode 2 of the Wind Up Podcast. I am Mike. I am the winemaker and owner of MTGA Wines. I realized in the introduction to this, as well as at episode 1, I didn't introduce myself and who I am and what I do. So that is who I am. That is what I do. I have been so excited to dive into this next episode and kind of get into what is going to be kind of our schedule of releasing these episodes. Last episode, for those that may not have caught it, or even for those who did, obviously we covered the kind of top level stuff in the winemaking process after grapes have been picked. They're at the winery and you're going to start making wine. We talked about the fermentation. We talked about the malolactic conversion. We talked about temperature. We talked about all kinds of things that kind of come and go throughout that process. Some of the judgment calls us winemakers will make, some of them, you know, for stylistic purposes, other for just overall stability and quality of the wine, all kinds of little things. And where we left that process off was at the aging process. And that's when you have kind of those volatile processes complete. The fermentation is done. The malolactic conversion is done. Your wine is ready to be aged. And that aging process can be anywhere from a few months, couple of months, to a few years. And there's a big distinction between the wines that obviously, you know, are kind of quicker to release, so that are bottled up a little bit sooner, and those that spend that extra time in a container of some sort for that aging process. So what I wanted to do is dive into that aging process, the type of vessels that we use, why we use those, kind of the stylistic considerations behind each. I also want to talk about kind of the amount of time and what we're looking for over the course of those months or those years, and how we decide when a wine is finally ready after that aging process. And as a part of that, I'll try and apply this to what we do with MTGA, the wines that I make, as well as the wines that my wife makes under the Blair Payton label. That'll be kind of some real life kind of practical application of how we use some of these things and what we try and do to get, you know, our grapes after they're harvested and now they're ready, they're through fermentation, they're ready to age, and what we're looking for from these different lots as we go along. So let's start with the vessels, right? And we'll start with the most popular one. Probably what people know the most about are the oak barrels that we use. Now, there's a combination of different types of barrels that we use every year. All of them happen to be from France. You can also get barrels from the United States. You can get them from Hungary and Croatia, a little bit. All of them tend to be oak barrels. There is a little bit of acacia wood that has been utilized in the past. Even some older big casks for wine production used to be made out of redwood. Those are largely not used anymore. But there are a lot of different types of things you can do with these barrels. And the best way I can describe these oak barrels, because think of it, let's start with oak. I'm not going to get too much into acacia, but let's talk about the oak side of things. Is that you can think of it really as, you know, much like Cabernet Sauvignon, a grape grown here in California versus a Cabernet Sauvignon grape grown in France. Just because of the country they're in, the weather that it experiences, the soil that it's in, that grape, even though it's the same grape, will have different flavors, different characteristics that go about it. The same is true of these oak forests. So with that, you know, depending on stylistically kind of what flavors you're trying to elicit, you might pick a different forest or a different country of where that oak is coming from. Think of like silver oak, for example, you know, a staple from Napa. You know, they use a ton of American oak because that stylistically is what they're going for. That's part of their template when they make their wines. You look at, let's see, I mean, we can use us as an example. We use exclusively French oak because I specifically love how those flavors interact and work with the wines that we're making. Brittany, on the other hand, for her wines, uses actually a fair amount of stainless steel, specifically for her rosé. So that, you know, will play a role, and she won't use too much new oak, but maybe some neutral barrels that have been used a couple of times. So there's a lot of different avenues that you can go with these oak barrels. On top of that, as many of you may know, and maybe you don't, but these barrels are charred or caramelized on the inside. Now, it's not quite like a bourbon barrel where they call it, you know, alligator skin. It's basically burnt to almost, it looks like, you know, it looks like a log that's been sitting on a fire, basically. So that's why they call it, you know, that alligator skin. But that's, you know, something that is, you know, a heavy, heavy toasting level. Wine barrels typically don't go that heavy, and what we're trying to do are elicit some of kind of the sweeter and lighter oak flavors. It's everything from vanilla, it's everything from dried fruits and spices and brown sugar and things of that nature. Just, you know, characteristics that we're trying to elicit from those barrels. So not only are we deciding, you know, what barrels from what country or what forest that we want to use to, you know, elicit certain flavors or characteristics, but now we're charring the inside of those barrels to a certain level to, you know, really add to that and really enhance some of those flavors and some of those characteristics. And that's, you know, for your new barrels. Now, of course, you can use an oak barrel over and over and over again. Typically, we use our own oak barrels probably 6 to 8 years before we finally rotate them out and buy new barrels to replace them. And the reason we do that is because there are certain wines that we don't want to put into new oak. That new oak can be really, really intense. It can be somewhat overbearing if it's, you know, applied to the wrong wine. So the way you can think about using these barrels is kind of like making, and this is an analogy that I use all the time. If you've sat down in the cave with me and tasted wine, you've heard me say this, and that is using an oak barrel over and over again is a lot like making a cup of tea over and over again with the same tea bag. It just keeps getting more and more watered down. You're not getting the flavors and the aromas out of that tea bag that you were once you've made 6 cups of tea with it, right? The same goes for your oak barrels. That as time goes on, and the more you use them, the less you're getting out of that barrel in terms of the flavors and the aromas and the characteristics. The caveat, though, is that it's still a great container for aging wine because it allows for very small amounts of oxygen in. It helps meld that wine and some of those other characteristics that are already established in the wine itself. It helps them come together, and it can create a blending component when it comes to, you know, kind of when you get closer to, you know, bottling that wine when it's all said and done. So oak barrels are immensely complex. They are amazing pieces of art. They're literally, you know, handmade. They're beautiful. They can be pricey, but well worth it if you're trying to make a high quality wine. There are certain things that you can do outside of oak barrels. This is particularly if you're trying to keep a wine a little bit cheaper, a little bit more affordable, is you can use everything from oak chips, almost like a tea bag kind of mentality, or adjuncts, where it's almost like little like mini staves and things that you'll put into a used barrel. And these new ones will be toasted and charred, and they'll have certain characteristics to add to your wine, but they're a lot cheaper than buying a brand new French oak barrel. So if you're looking to make a wine kind of on a dime, you can buy some of these oak adjuncts. You can buy some of these chips and other things. There's even like sawdusts and extracts and all kinds of stuff that you can use to, you know, kind of manufacture these oaky flavors. That is all stuff that we are going to get into in another episode when it comes to kind of additives and fining and filtering and all of this other stuff. So that's going to get lumped in with a whole nother episode. So more on, you know, kind of the outlying things that folks use for winemaking. You know, we'll get to that down the road. All right. So let's say you're trying to keep a wine kind of a little bit lighter, a little bit fresher. That's when stainless steel comes into play. And this is stainless steel is something that is relatively new to the wine industry. It wasn't until, I believe, the 70s that stainless steel started becoming more and more prevalent within the wine industry. And it's something that's great because we can temperature control it. It's something that doesn't, you know, provide any flavors or characteristics. If you're really trying to retain kind of the natural integrity of the grape and the wine you've made, stainless steel is a great option. You know, it's not going to breathe all that much. You can keep it topped off with argon gas or nitrogen and keep that container really, really full. That way, there's little to no oxygen left in there, and it keeps the wine very, very stable. This is the same reason why we have stainless steel kegs, you know, laying about the winery. When we don't have enough wine to fill up a full barrel, we break it down into 15-gallon kegs or even pony kegs. That way, we can, you know, keep the air off of that just by gassing it and sparging all that oxygen out of there, and it keeps that wine nice and stable so that we can use that for topping up some of those oak barrels. Stainless steel is a great tool for us in the wine industry, both just from the winemaking side of things as well as the aging side of things. It's very easy to clean. It doesn't have a high impact on the wine. And as long as you keep that equipment in good working order, you don't puncture one of those barrels with a forklift or something like that, you can use it over and over and over and over again. You don't have to worry about spending $1,200 on a new oak barrel every year if you're using that stainless steel barrel. It's kind of nice. So another way to kind of help save on some costs in that sense as well. There are a couple other options, and these are two that actually I have never worked with in any way, shape, or form, but I kind of know the gist of why folks use them and how they're applied to some of their wines. And that would be concrete as well as clay amphoras, very old school. I mean, going back to clay pots and aging wine goes back thousands of years. Concrete is something that has been kind of fine-tuned over the years into those like egg-shaped containers, which look really rad. From what I understand, the reason that folks use these is that you're not necessarily allowing for as much oxygen exposure like you would from an oak barrel, but it's not as airtight as stainless steel would be. Because they are a little bit porous and there's little pores on the insides of these types of containers, that a little bit more air tends to be in them in general. So it allows for a slightly more oxidation than you would expect, and it helps kind of round out that wine without keeping it as airtight as a stainless steel, you know, barrel would be, or a stainless steel tank would be, and also not as oxidative as an oak barrel would be. So they tend to kind of play in this middle ground. I know that there are a lot of folks that use them that swear by them. I know there are a lot of folks that are kind of like, it's kind of, you know, I kind of want one or the other. I don't need this middle ground kind of container. I have also heard in the past that these can be an absolute chore to keep clean, which, you know, winemaking is basically 50% just cleaning stuff at least. So, you know, if that becomes an issue, you know, I've thought about purchasing some of these concrete eggs for our white wine production, but because of the cleanliness thing and Con Valley being what it is where we make our wines, it's kind of like, you know what, I'm gonna hold off on doing that because I want to make sure that our wines, you know, the quality stays there, and I don't want to have to, you know, it was a little bit of like this, it sounds like a really great idea, but I don't know if this is going to be really truly advantageous. I really believe that at a certain point there would be diminishing returns with it. I do want to try and use either amphora or concrete at some point down the line, because it would be cool to try out that middle of the ground, middle of the road kind of vessel, but you know, we'll see. I know some people love them. Some people are like, not for us. But realistically, they seem like great options. They're both things that you can use, you know, stylistically to kind of be a balancing act between those oak barrels as well as those stainless steel barrels or tanks that you might be using. So those are kind of the major vessels that we use. I would say probably the two most popular are definitely the oak barrels as well as stainless steel. Concrete is definitely kind of trendy, as are clay amphoras for some small producers, but they're, you know, those are a little bit tougher to come by from my understanding of it, although I've seen plenty of them be used, you know, just because we're submerged in the wine industry. You get to know people that are like, oh yeah, we love using that stuff. So each one of those things will really kind of be just a What do you feel like using? And realistically, when that wine is done fermenting, you know, what vessel are you going to put it in so that you can really truly kind of elicit the flavors and characteristics that you want to, right? You know, it's kind of this, it's a very subjective judgment call. And based on the vineyard that you're working with, the fruit that you're working with, and where you want it to go. What's up, Freddy? Oh, hi, buddy. I'm in the middle of something. Of course, I start talking and you come in here and you yell at me. Goober. Anyway. So, you know, it's really just kind of a stylistic consideration. And you have to decide kind of what vessel is going to be best suited for the wines that you are trying to make. Whether you're the owner of that brand or you're the winemaker or you're consulting, whatever the case may be, it's always open for discussion and it's always kind of fun to experiment and have kind of these R&D departments within our wine production to try some of these things out. So now that you've decided on the container, whether it's concrete, whether it's amphora, whether it's a oak barrel or it's stainless steel, now you're talking about the amount of time that you're going to age that wine. Now there's a lot of things that go into this. And arguably the most important, in my opinion, is what you want that wine to be and taste like.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Because after a certain amount of time, you will hit a level of diminishing returns when it comes to keeping it in that vessel. Especially when it comes to oak, because you think of like, oh, it stays in these oak barrels. And you think of like a whiskey program. You're like, oh, if it's 10 years old or if it's 15 or 20, like it kind of, you think it gets better and better the older it gets. But the reality is that wine is a little bit more delicate. And at a certain point, you probably want to take it out of barrel and you want to get that bottled up, because realistically, that barrel's not going to be providing much more to that wine, both from a flavor standpoint, but also from just as it's oxidizing and continuing down that path. I mean, you can actually run into some issues as you go further down that line. Stainless steel is obviously, you can keep it airtight. You can probably keep it in stainless steel for a very long time. But typically, if you're using stainless steel, it's for a more kind of crisp and refreshing style of wine. So you're probably bottling that sooner rather than later. Concrete and amphora, kind of that, again, middle of the road. I don't know of too many people that are aging their wines in those containers for an extended period of time, but a few months or even, you know, year in change seems to be kind of the trend. Again, that's very much up to kind of who's using it. I don't know of anyone that's doing like any long-term, like 2 years, 3 years, or extending aging in those containers, but I'm sure someone is. There's always exceptions that prove the rules, right? Especially when it comes to winemaking. Now, once you've kind of figured out, you know, again, stylistically where you're going, you can kind of dial in that time frame. But you're going to be tasting along the way to make sure that your wine is continuing down the right path and that it's tasting the way that you want it to. The best example that I have for this is when we started making Pinot Noir. I had in my head what I wanted to do and how much time that was likely going to need to make the style of Pinot Noir that I wanted to make. And for the first few years, we were doing this. We were using about 30% new French oak, and we were aging it for about 18 months before we were bottling it. And then we were typically aging it for another year in bottle after the fact. But as the years went on, and we kept trying wines, and come 2019 and into 2020 and 2021, I started to realize that at about that, you know, 8 to 14 month period, the wine was kind of peaking in barrel. And basically, by the time 12 months to 14 months rolled around, it wasn't getting so much better that I needed to wait 16 or 18 months to bottle that wine anymore. There was that level of diminishing returns where I was like, you know what? I could keep it in barrel, but realistically, the only reason I'm doing that is because I can. It's not because it's actually doing anything exponentially better for the wine. Like, it just, there wasn't anything else that was really coming about to make that wine level up. So we started bottling that wine sooner rather than later. You know, we reduced the aging time in barrel from 18 months down to 12 months. And the wines are beautiful. It's been a really great adjustment to our winemaking program. So that's a part of that judgment call and that timing is you're kind of trying to figure out, you know, especially when you're adding a new wine to your lineup, you kind of have a ballpark of what you want it to be. But if at a certain point, it's just tasting really great, throw that into the next bottling run or schedule it and get rolling. This is a conversation I have with clients all the time. And it's, we get the questions like, how long do you think this will age for? How long do you think it needs? And I can always ballpark it. I'm like, yeah, well, our, you know, Pinot Noir is around 12 months, Merlot is around 2 years, Cabernet is 2 years to 3 years, you know, aging time. But if it tastes really good and I want to bottle it sooner, I bottle it sooner. It's just you keep tabs on it, you try it every once in a while, and you can make that judgment call as you go. So the timing is incredibly variable. It's something that we always have a ballpark for, but it's never something that's like, okay, it needs to be this. There's always a little bit of a range to it. Now, to kind of complicate the timing of aging is your release schedule. You know, if you have wine club shipments in the spring and you're shipping out your white wine or your red blend like we do, you need to have those things in bottle. So there is kind of a schedule that you need to adhere to. And that will influence some of those stylistic considerations. You know, you're probably not going to, if you're looking for just a bright, crisp, clean white wine that you want to be ready for the next spring, you might not throw a bunch of new oak barrels at that because you don't want to sit there and wait 8 months for that oak to really start to integrate, much less a little bit longer, and then bottle it like the next fall and then release it the following year. So you don't necessarily want to, you know, wait that long for your white wine to get out there if you're making that crisp, very clean kind of spring and summertime kind of wine. Now, if you're making that kind of oakier, more intense, kind of like creamier style of Chardonnay, maybe you need that time, right? And you're going to extend that aging. You're like, you know what? We're going to age this Chardonnay for at least 8 months, if not a year or more, to let all these characters really meld together and make it a little bit richer and a little bit more intense style of white wine. So again, it's just kind of the stylistic consideration, and you adapt your time frame to that and when you want to be selling that wine. This is kind of a trick of the trade, realistically, is that there's so many white wines that producers make is because we can typically release those before the reds, right? They're typically ready before the red wines are, so that way it's a cash flow game for us. Our white wine is to help us pay bills. I love making white wine. It's great to have the Pinot Gris and the Riesling before it in our lineup, but we have that released every spring because I need to start saving up money for grapes. And I have plenty of bills to pay between, you know, the bottling runs and getting into harvest as well. So it's really, really important that I have money in the bank. So white wines, it's kind of like a gin or a vodka program from a whiskey company. It's kind of this, we're waiting 5 or 10 years for this whiskey to be ready. In the meantime, here, drink this. You know, it's a way that we can kind of play the game and make sure that we financially are in a good, healthy spot. So that is a big part of this aging process as well, is like, hey, when do we need to sell these wines so that we can pay our bills? So you might cut things, if as long as the wine's in a good spot, you might cut it that month shorter than you expected, or if you've got time and you're not too worried about it, you can extend some aging on some things as well, you know, if it just needs more time. We've done that, you know, as well with a few of our wines, specifically the Merlot and our Cabernet. We've been like, hey, this just needs more time, so we're gonna wait. We're not in a huge cash crunch. We don't need to worry about getting this out to people right now. We're gonna let this sit, we're gonna let this age, and we'll get to it when we get to it. So the aging time is interesting because for us, it's very much, there's very much wiggle room involved because it's really dependent on how the wine is tasting and where I want it to be and where I think it needs to go. it's a very subjective thing. So, and speaking of, I mean, kind of tasting and figuring things out, this will be a little bit of a tangent, I suppose, but, you know, when we're tasting in barrel, we're not looking for the wine to be a complete finished product. I was hosting some groups this last weekend. I was actually doing some cellar work and racking some of our wines and moving some wines from, you know, one barrel to another barrel, so on and so forth. I'm tasting these barrels as we're going, and it's all wine from 2022. It's a few months old at this stage, right? And it's just a quick checkup to make sure that the wines are on the right track. And I was making a bunch of noise, and some guests were walking through the cave. I was like, oh, here, you know, I'm kind of being obnoxious, making a bunch of noise here, and have a little barrel sample. This is our 2022 cab. And they thought it was delicious. And they asked when it was going to be bottled. And I was like, yeah, probably like 2-3 years from now. And their jaws kind of hit the floor. They're like, yeah, but it's really good now. I'm like, yeah, but it's going to be better if we wait. So again, kind of that timing side of things. But it was also, this is something that if you're coming out to Napa, you're going to Texas, you're going to Oregon or going abroad somewhere and you get to do some barrel tasting, this is something that you should keep in mind, is that you're tasting an incomplete product, is that the barrel you're tasting is probably going to be pretty good. But if they're making 10 barrels of that wine, that's 1/10 of what that wine is really going to be. And they might be tasting on a barrel that's been used once. They might be tasting on a barrel that's new. They're, you know, whoever is barrel tasting, giving you that barrel tasting, is showing you something kind of cool and kind of fun, but realistically, it is just it's a blip on the radar of what that wine is going to end up looking like. So even if a barrel tasting is not your favorite wine, keep in mind that if you like the wines typically by the end, you know, when they're bottled up and really ready to be consumed, it'll get there. It just takes that time. There have been plenty of folks that have really tried to manufacture that time and this aging process. And there are a lot of things you can do, excuse me, that are kind of tricks of the trade. But if you're making really true, fine, like high quality wine, you have to be patient. You have to wait. You have to use high quality materials such as new barrels. The oak chips aren't going to get you there. It'll make a style of wine that's pretty good, maybe. But if you're really trying to make great high quality wine, you're going to have to spend some coin and fork out for the new barrels. You're going to have the good equipment. There's going to be certain things that you kind of have to do to level your wine up. You can't just try and force the issue. Many people have tried. The wines turn out fine, but they don't turn out to be kind of the iconic or super memorable or life-changing wines that I think we all are hunting for in our kind of wine drinking, you know, careers, basically. So, tangent, but needed to be said, I think, when it comes to kind of this aging process and what our opinions are of these barrels as we're tasting them. And it's, for me, it's always a snapshot. Here's where this wine's at. It's on a good path. Here are the other 8 barrels or so we're going to be blending with this. These are all on a good track. This barrel is going to be the structure and the backbone. This barrel is going to be the fruity characteristics. This barrel is a little bit more acidic. This one's a little bit smoother. And you're bringing all those pieces together to really create that final blend when it comes to bottling. So with that, you know, with everything that we've kind of touched on, let's talk about just kind of practical applications of some of this. So let's start with, we talked a little bit about MTGA and Blair Peyton, but let's talk about the Pinot Gris that we're making as well as the Blair Peyton Rosé that Brittany is making. So these couple of wines are kind of those quick to market wines. We only age them for about 6 months, believe it or not. So in 2022, these grapes were harvested in late August. They're going to be bottled in late February. We're literally 29 days away from the bottling run. If you're watching this as it comes out, it's going to be, these wines are going to be bottled on February 28th. So it's end of February is when we're bottling them. And the reason that we're doing this is because we want them ready for the springtime. We want them to be very bright. We want them to be very fresh. We don't want them to oxidize too much during the aging process. So we feel as though to really make the quality of white wine that we want to make, or rosé in Brittany's case, that we need to bottle them sooner rather than later. We don't want to wait a couple extra months. We don't want to wait even a couple extra weeks. Like February is when we want this bottling run to happen, because we feel as though these wines are in a great spot and we want to capture what they're all about while they're in this great spot so that they're ready for the spring and the summer months. Now, there's an oddball that we're going to be bottling at the end of February, and that is the Blair Peyton Grenache. This is a red wine that is aged for 6 months and then bottled after 6 months. And typically you think Napa, you think California, or even just, you know, red wine in general, like, oh, well, it's going to be in barrel for at least, you know, a year or so, right? Maybe 8 months at the lowest. But, you know, Brittany really wanted to make this kind of more kind of light-hearted, almost like chillable style red wine that's just very crushable, much like a white wine or a rosé would be. And this is something that you see in like Beaujolais, for example. And not necessarily Beaujolais Nouveau, that's, you know, ready a couple of weeks after harvest. It is something that is something, you know, still got some good body, some good structure to it, but they're a little bit more lighthearted, like less serious kinds of wine, like kind of wine, even though there are some amazing cru Beaujolais out there that are worth trying. But it makes a red wine that's just very easy drinking. It's kind of like a step back from Pinot Noir, not in a bad way. It's just a little bit lighter, simpler, yummier, just, you know, red wine that you don't have to think about. And when you want a nice glass of red wine on a warm day, you're like, you know what, this one can have a little bit of a chill on it. It's beautiful. So, you know, that's a red wine style that we've incorporated, or that Brittany has incorporated, because that's a style of wine that she loves to drink. And she wanted to make a wine that emulates that. Now the vessels that we use for these three wines are going to be stainless steel. That's for the Pinot Gris and for the Rosé specifically. These two are actually opposite proportions. We do use some neutral French oak barrels for these. So they're barrels that have been used at least two or three times. So they're not really imparting any flavors or characteristics to the wine. Now the Pinot Gris sees about 2/3 neutral oak, and then the last third is going to be stainless steel. The rosé is the opposite. It's actually about 2/3 stainless steel and then 1/3 neutral oak. And that's largely just based, again, kind of stylistically, what do these wines need? You want to keep the rosé a little bit brighter, a little bit more refreshing, so we're keeping it in that stainless steel that's going to have a far less of an impact and oxidize that wine less. The Pinot Gris, on the other hand, I want to have some body in that wine. I want it to round out a little bit, but not too much. So we kind of hedge our bets a little bit. We keep it in those neutral oak barrels so that oxidative process does happen slowly but surely, but we bottle it soon so that it doesn't lose too much of that very crisp and refreshing nature. Now the red wine, the Blair Peyton Grenache, is 100% neutral French oak. We want a little bit more of that oxidative process. We want that wine to smooth out and round out a little bit more. Therefore, no stainless steel is used in that wine, but we use the neutral barrels just because, again, they're great containers. So let's go into kind of our bigger reds, right? So we're talking the MTG Merlot and our Cabernet Sauvignon, our red blend as well, or any of the barrel select or single barrel wines that we've done in the past. Now, these wines are going to age for much longer. We're talking 18 months, 2 years, 3 years in terms of the aging time based on where we want them to go and what we want them to be. So this is where we draw out that aging process quite a bit more. For things like our Merlot and even our Pinot Noir, we only use about 30% new barrels. And the reason we only use 30% is because we just want a little bit of that spice. We just want a little bit of those vanilla and butterscotch and coffee kind of characteristics. We just want a dash. We don't want it to define the wines. We want it to be a component, right? So I really want the Pinot Noir and the Merlot to speak for what those varieties are. And having just a smaller percentage of new oak in those wines will help me achieve that. The rest of those barrels have all been used once, twice, three times, maybe even four times, typically. So there's, again, still great containers, kind of taking that same mentality of the Blair Peyton Grenache, where we want, you know, those wines to round out and smooth out, but we don't want them to hit you upside the head too hard. Now, when we level up to the red blend, this is where we increase, and even our Napa Valley Cabernet, actually, these two wines typically see about 50 to 60% new oak, maybe a little bit more depending on the year, but that's kind of the average, is 50 to 60%. And that's largely because you have Napa Cabernet. One, it's a bigger kind of bolder variety. It can withstand a little bit more oak aging. And the red blend has, you know, roughly 40 to 50% Cabernet in it as well. It just needs a little bit more. So with these bigger varieties, we end up using, you know, some bigger barrels with more flavor, and they're going to have a greater impact on the wine. And that goes even further when it comes to things like our single barrel wines, like our St. Helena Merlot, the Black Knight Pinot Noir, our Cabernet Franc, or our Grand Cask Cabernet. These are wines that see maybe 80 or 100% new oak. And the reason for that is we want the full force of these barrels to really have a big impact. We want them to help define these wines and what they are stylistically for us. So you can almost think of like it's kind of this arms race of the barrels that we use, from our lighter, you know, whites to rosé to, you know, Pinot Noir and Grenache to Merlot to Cabernet and red blends and everything up here, right? So kind of the bigger and bolder I want the wine to be, the newer the barrels get, or the larger proportion of newer barrels that we use, right? So that's kind of from a practical application, how we use barrels and stainless steel. As I mentioned, we don't use any concrete or clay M4s just yet, but maybe one day. So, you know, there's kind of this, I guess there's, when I moved back to Napa, you know, there's this big trend of kind of the more new oak, the better. And that's why we've kind of dialed back the oak program a little bit for what has been kind of typical of Napa these days. We want to have, you know, a little bit more subtlety, maybe, you know, call it a little bit more finesse in the wines, where the oak aging is a great component for kind of our benchmark wines, you know, between the Pinot Noir, the Merlot specifically, since that's our flagship, as well as since we've started making Cabernet in our red blend, we want that to be, you know, obviously a part of those flavors and those characteristics, but we don't want to overdo it. And when we're doing our barrel select program for any of our single barrel wines, or like our Cabernet Franc, that's when, you know, I'm tasting through those barrels. I'm saying this barrel can withstand, or this lot can kind of withstand that new oak profile. In fact, it's going to enhance it and only make it better. That's how we started making our single barrel Merlot in 2013 when we first made that wine, was this barrel is good enough and big enough and bold enough that this new oak is going to be a great component rather than a defining characteristic. It's not going to be too heavy-handed. It's going to balance out with the wine very, very well. And that's something that when you're using, in my experience, these new barrels, it takes time. You're not going to see a big impact in the wine for probably 6 or 8 months. You'll definitely taste it and you'll smell it. It'll start kind of absorbing into the wine over those months. But after 6 or 8 months, I feel as though I have a much better understanding of how it's going to impact that wine. So typically come June or July, I go back through and I taste through everything, especially if it's in new barrels, and I see how it's coming along. And at that point, I can kind of gauge how much more time I want it to be in that barrel, or maybe it's absorbing those oak flavors really, really fast, and it's really, really intense, and I don't want it to be too woody. I can take that wine out of that new barrel and make sure that it doesn't go too far past where I want it to be. So, you know, again, playing with that aging time, the vessel that it's in, and just evaluating as you go is really what the aging process is all about. Because if you did a good job during your fermentation and kind of the more volatile aspects of the winemaking process, by the time you get to this aging stage in the new year, your job as a winemaker is to be a guiding hand and make sure everything stays on track. That is the number one thing I'm trying to do every time I go out into the cellar and taste through barrels, or we start blending and getting ready for bottling when it's all said and done. So aging it's arguably, I always say kind of the, you know, harvest is always such an amazing time, but aging and the beginning of the aging process is probably my favorite. It's this time in January into February in the new year where you can go and taste through all of your newest wines that you just picked, that you just put all this work into, and you start to smell and taste the potential that these wines have. And 2022, for example, having tasted all those wines just this last weekend, the last weekend in January, it starts to remind you of like, oh, this 22 vintage for us. And anyway, it's very reminiscent of the 2015 vintage and the flavors and characteristics that came out of that very hot and dry season that had very low yields. We made maybe a third of the wine that we normally do in that year because the vineyards were just, it's a long story, but we weren't able to make nearly as much wine as we were in 2015. And these wines, right as they're tasting now, are like, oh, this is kind of that same starting point that those wines were in. So you really get to try, you know, you really get to kind of, you know, right now, like, oh, here's where they're headed. This is what to expect. And this is when I get really, really excited, is because you start to really experience that, which is a lot of fun. Oh my gosh, I forgot something. We were talking oak barrels at the very beginning, and we mentioned, of course, French oak, American oak, and Hungarian and kind of Eastern European, oak programs. And we need to talk about that. And I know I mentioned that we use exclusively French oak as opposed to American oak. And we talked a little bit about, how American oak, because it's grown here in the States versus, being grown in France or in Hungary. I mean, it's obviously going to have different flavors and characteristics. But here's the difference. French oak typically has much tighter grains. So you look at like a piece of wood, you can see the grains, right? They're much tighter and more dense when it comes to French oak. The Hungarian oak tends to be a little bit wider, and American oak tends to be a little bit wider than that. So think of it this way. French oak typically has less surface area available within the wine because those pores aren't quite as big. The Hungarian oak will have a little bit more, and the American oak a little bit more. So typically, because there's more surface area within an American oak barrel, you're going to have more of an impact. More of the wine is touching that barrel, and as a result, more is getting absorbed into that wine. So for that purpose, American oak tends to be, or can be, pretty heavy-handed, pretty intense, and can add a lot of flavor to your wine. The Hungarian oak or Slovenian oak can be kind of the middle of the road. It's not quite as wide, and the grains aren't quite as dense as French, but they're not quite as loose as, say, American oak. So those are kind of the middle of the road. Very similar to the aging process of like an M4 or a concrete. They kind of like split the difference between, say, stainless steel and oak barrels. The Hungarian oak barrels are kind of the in-between between like American oak and French oak. Now, the reason that we use French oak for MTGA exclusively is because we're making wines that are a little bit more subtle, a little bit more restrained. If we were to use American oak, it'd be far too heavy-handed. Those flavors and characteristics would just come screaming out of the gate, and the wine would frankly be overpowered by those barrels. So I love using French oak for MTGA because it has a much more subtle impact. I find those barrels are a little bit creamier, a little bit richer. And they just work for stylistically what I'm trying to do with the wines that I make. I've worked with some American oak in the past, with some Syrah and some Zinfandel specifically, so kind of bigger, juicier varieties that can withstand some of that intensity. I've not used any Hungarian oak or Slovenian oak, to my knowledge, although I've seen it kind of here and there and everywhere. They're, from what I understand, a good in between. You're not necessarily going to get the subtlety that French oak provides or the intensity, again, that American oak provides, but they're kind of a good middle of the road, solid choice, depending on, stylistically what you're trying to do. So those are kind of the major differences between those. This is actually, with the intensity of American oak, it's why someone like Silver Oak that makes these really, they use, so much new, I mean, I think exclusively all 100% like new American oak. They own their own cooperage. Those wines, like when they're young for me, they're like, whoa, like they hit you right in the mouth. And then 10 years, 15, 20 years go by, and you're like, damn, this is actually like really nice, really smooth. I've seen the same thing with Ridge Vineyards in Santa Cruz. They, use a lot of American oak as well. And it's something that is like, okay, now once those wines get a little older, it settles down and it's more to my liking. Now, again, with everything being subjective, if you love that intensity and that big flavor, then yeah, you can open up those wines sooner rather than later. If you want a little bit more subtlety, then maybe you're waiting for those wines to age, and the same can go for, any of these, vessels. There are plenty of folks that are oddballs like me that love to age white wine. I love for those things to kind of evolve and change over years. Again, going back to time and that aging process, whether it's in barrel and it's still in our hands, or it's at home with you in a wine fridge or storage unit somewhere, that aging process continues as long as that wine's in bottle, and it will change ever so slightly and continue to change ever so slightly as the years go on. The aging process as it pertains to like when to open your wines or when they're going to peak and be best, we're going to get into that next month. Since we're going to continue down this aging path and kind of the wine production side of things, we're going to dive into the you've bought a wine, how long should you hang on to it? That is going to be a couple weeks from now. Next week, we are going to get into more of an opinion piece. This is something that I'm going to start doing, is kind of casting a line out of kind of here are my thoughts on a certain portion or segment of the industry, or kind of what's going on or what's happening. And we're going to be tackling wine ratings next week. It's a fun one. I had a lot of fun talking about it. I hope that it's useful information. And that, you know, these first two episodes that were a little bit more kind of educational and kind of talking about the winemaking process and what we look for, starting with the fermentation and getting into the aging process. I hope these have been useful to you. So again, if you have any questions that you would like to have answered, the last week of every month, I'm going to start doing a Q&A. It'll be more rapid fire as opposed to going for, you know, 35 or 45 minutes on a single topic. We'll try and do 5 or 10 minutes on 3 or 4 topics and bang out kind of more rapid fire questions. So if you have any questions, please leave them in the comments. Also, don't forget to subscribe. If you have any suggestions as well, this is only episode 2. Remember that. Like, I'm figuring this out. I think we're off to a pretty good start. I know there are little things, like the camera keeps trying to focus on my hand when I get it like really, really close. And then when I pull away, it like zooms out a little bit. I think the sound has been okay. Like anything that is useful critique is also welcome. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week to talk about some wine ratings. And after that, actually, the third week of February, we're going to get into a little wine tasting action. We're going to announce what we're going to be getting into on social media, likely Instagram and Twitter, as well as Facebook, before that point in time. So if you want to go out and track down some of those wines, we're going to do that live on Twitch. We have a Twitch channel that I've been using for some time. It'll be uploaded to YouTube the following day on Thursday. So we'll do the wine tasting on Wednesday night. I'll cut that and we'll get it uploaded on Thursday for a premiere as well. So all kinds of fun and exciting things. So we will see you next time. Cheers.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.